Oh, goodness gracious, Jeepers Creepers. It is time for the fantastic radio experience known as a fine-er mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor, Adam being myself and the professor, Dr. Ronald L. Feynman. We get together most Mondays and talk today's trendy topics in politics, presidentology, and who knows what else. We repeat the show multiple times because it's just so good. So on the line with me is my partner in crime, microphone mate, brother in broadcasting, Dr. Ronald L. Feynman in Florida. And how are you today, Ron, on this beautiful late day in April?
I'm doing fine. We've had rain here, which is good because we needed rain. We haven't had rain in quite a while, so it's nice to see it come because we were getting too much. The Lake Okeechobee north of us was getting low. We do need rain, so I hope we get more rain. But I don't want hurricanes, and unfortunately, the indications are this might be a bad hurricane season, at least by projection.
And this is the year when it seems like it's April Fool's Day every day during the month of April. Yeah. April Fool's Day, not just being the 1st of April, but the entire month. But it just gives us more and more things to talk about. But first and foremost, Ron, on a lighter, happier note, are you going to join me as we sing happy birthday, happy half century to Melania Trump? Or should I sing
yes,
it by myself?
Yes, April 26th, yes.
Do you want to join me as we sing happy birthday to Melania?
No, actually, okay. I don't.
Then I'll sing by myself. One, two, three, four. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Melania. Or as your husband says, Melanie. Remember, he once called her Melanie, to which I asked you, your wife, may she rest in peace.
Yes.
Her name was Adria, which kind of sounds like either Adrian or Andrea, but unlike Donald.
Yeah, well, she often was by people. She knew that, yeah.
You never confused her name. You always called her Adria.
No, I never did. But I have a brain. I must tell you, though, the fact that Melania is 50, I think that's going to make Donald, who wants young women, think, oh, my God, she's half a century. She had a baby. She's not quite the shape she was when Barry was born. And I'm sure he has put his eyes elsewhere, including his new press secretary. He looks just like Ivanka. Just like Ivanka, who he's lusted after before. So I have a feeling we're going to maybe someday learn that. Maybe that's why he hired this new woman to be his press secretary. Sorry to say.
But I don't think Donald looks like he did when they gave birth to Barron.
No, he certainly does not. But that's different because he's a male chauvinist pig. He only thinks about himself. He wants the women to be young and beautiful and perfect shape. But at 50, okay, she's in good shape, but she's not the same as when she was 30 or 40. Come on, nobody is, yeah?
Well, I don't get older, Ron. I get better.
So you say.
Which means I must be pretty good by now. So, listeners, if you're not familiar with Dr. Ronald Feynman, he has a PhD in, I think, American history, or what I call presidentology. He still teaches, even though he's,
yes.
I guess, what's the word? Septuagenarian, I believe that's the word. He's actually between the age of Donald Trump. He was born in the same hospital as Donald Trump, by the way. Between Donald's age and Joe Biden's age, but he's very spry for his age. He still teaches in Florida. He's written books, one of which has become quite popular. It's about presidential assassinations, which I'm currently reading and we're talking about from time to time. He's taught for many years. He has studied under some famous political and historical minds. And, of course, he
Arthur Schlesinger Jr., yes, who was the Kennedy advisor.
Provides correct. Commentary on this station on a podcast on Blog Talk Radio hosted by Gwendolyn Holden Berry and a few of her cronies. He also writes for
Wayne Johnson and Jack Jodell, yes.
The History News Network and whatever else he can find time
and theprogressiveprofessor.com. Thank you for the plug.
Yes, to provide
discourse.
And also
discourse, on, of course, book and Twitter, of course. Yeah.
Commentary and whatever else might float his boat. In addition to appearing with me, most weeks he also appears with Interviewer to the Stars. I call him It's Scott Spears, my additional brother in broadcasting. And last week, Ron, you appeared with Scott Spears on his morning program, and you made quite
an impression. Yeah, it was great. It was a great hour. He's a great interviewer. I've said to people, to me, he's like the Walter Cronkite of our time.
Yes, he's like Walter Cronkite without the mustache and without the pipe. He's
yes,
a little bit younger, a little bit bigger, too. Walter Cronkite wasn't a very big guy. I know he was on Mary Tyler Moore show. Again, not as big as you might think because he had that big voice. But Scott Spears is a rather large fellow. But he has to match his large physique, he has a large number of celebrities that he talks to and a large amount of knowledge and expertise in the interviewing talent. So, yes, definitely is always a pleasure to be on with Scott, as I am on from time to time. I've been calling a show a lot of late. Do you like to listen? And Ron was on with him several days ago. Now, during that appearance, Ron, you made quite an impression. I'm not sure if this came up before, but many people discussed this, and Scott and I talked about it. Terry Tackett talked about it. The main thing was one thing that you said at the beginning of the program, and actually another one of
our... I'm not sure what you're talking about. Tell me.
Well, you said so much, I'll have to clarify, and as one of my favorite words, recapitulate. One of our fellow hosts, Glenn Coble,
I'm not capitulating.
Glenn Coble actually said he agreed with you and kind of giggled, but Scott thought it was kind of a strong choice of words, maybe not an inaccurate choice of words, just kind of a strong choice. And that was where you said that Donald J. Trump was mentally ill. Now, in the nuclear age, in the times we live in, which certainly are treacherous, precarious, touchy, whatever you want to say, having a president who's mentally ill probably is not something you want to admit or to be a participant in. And we're all participants because we live in this great country where Donald J. Trump, whether or not you like it, is the president. Now, Scott kind of felt that was kind of a strong choice of words and maybe a bit, I guess hyperbola would be the best way. And, of course, Donald Trump is known to speak in hyperbola. It is kind of a characteristic of his, and it's either funny or dangerous or just silly, depending upon how you look at it. Often, in my case, I kind of feel all three things at the same time. But the mental illness issue, Ron, do you think it was a strong choice of words? And I don't believe that you need to be an MD graduating from Harvard to determine if someone has a mental illness. I've self-diagnosed myself with a mild mental illness, which I talk about from time to time.
No, I don't think because I think mental illness, it's not so much if somebody is a little slow, like people say Joe Biden's a little slow and he makes blunders, but when somebody does vicious and says vicious things and acts like like nobody matters but him and acts irrationally and tells people to take, indeed, I can't even say it, I'm so upset about what he suggested a few days ago, and already people have gone to the hospital in Maryland and New York and elsewhere because they took bleach or other things that he suggested. To me, that is mental illness, and he's dangerous, as much as somebody who has a heart condition or cancer, but more so because he has the power of the button for nuclear weapons. That's what worries me.
No, I'll take your side here, Ron. I don't think you need to be an MD or even in the medical field at all to make a basic diagnosis. Again, the diagnosis I make for myself, which is a mild condition anyway, which is common among very smart people, so I actually take it as a compliment. I think it's pretty obvious. Just look at Wikipedia, for goodness sakes. But in terms of Donald Trump, where, again, he's president, I'm not, and his diagnosis, I think, is something a bit more serious. Can you tell us
exactly? Absolutely. Like, if you have a little problem, it doesn't. What happens with him affects everybody in the world. Yes.
What mental condition do you think that he has?
Well, I think he's narcissistic to the extreme.
Okay.
And I think also he is someone who has no empathy, compassion. And that's really a very dangerous thing, especially when you're in a leadership position. It's one thing if your relative, someone, is not that way. It only affects a few people. But when you're dealing with someone who has no concern, has shown no concern for the loss of life that's gone on in the last 6 weeks, and honestly talks about crazy things like maybe using nuclear weapons, and he suggested that, and people around him have been alarmed, that is a dangerous person in a position of power. If he was just what he was in his private life, it wouldn't matter that much. But it does matter in this case.
So sociopath might be the correct term to use, right? Again, I don't claim to be an expert in that field. Would the symptoms that you're mentioning, they seem to be consistent with sociopathy. Would that be an accurate assessment of what you're saying, or am I using the wrong word?
Sociopath? Yeah, I think when someone's in a position of power and acts the way he does and says what he does and shows his lack of concern about human beings, that's different than even if you and I didn't, because we don't affect too many people. We hurt some people, but he's affecting all Americans and, in theory, the whole world and large, and that's what's scary.
So you feel that he has sociopathic inclinations?
Yes, and I know I'm not a psychiatrist, but I don't agree that you have to sit down with a person. You can watch him on his interviews and his press conferences. That, to me, is the same thing. You don't have to have a doctor sit with him alone and talk to him to figure it out. I disagree with that idea that you can't speak up because you haven't seen him in person. We've seen him in person for all these years since he came down the escalator and started a racist, nativist campaign and misogynistic campaign. And to me, that's enough evidence that the man is a dangerous person who could put us into a disaster worse than what we have now. I just hope and pray he doesn't.
Now, the misogyny, Ron, that's come up, and we've talked about it multiple times. Why do you feel that he is a misogynist, meaning he feels women are inferior, dislikes women? He has plenty of women in his cabinet and his staff. I agree that he has an affinity for attractive women. That's a natural male inclination. Bill Clinton did the same thing.
Issue. The fact is, his behavior around the Miss Teen USA people, walking into the dressing room when they're half naked, and all the different people who have said that he was abusing them, and those two women who sued him, and others, and it's not just like a handful. What about that interview on whatever that show was on TV years ago when he talked about going after people, they love it and they'll do it for you and all that? To me, anything that Joe Biden is accused of is by comparison, or even others, is nothing compared to what Trump has been accused of and what he has done, because we've known for years he was involved with Epstein. We know that. And so many other places. He has a long history of abuse of women, but they always don't do anything in most cases until recently because he's powerful and he's wealthy and all that. But now they've started to speak up, and it's not affected people who support Trump, but they're all going after Joe on one woman claiming something which I think is preposterous and happened 27 years ago, and suddenly now she brings it up when she could have brought it up when Obama picked Biden, but she didn't. And to me, it's no comparison. I'm not saying other politicians are all great on the way they treat women, but I think he's the all-time serial abuser of women, more than Bill Clinton.
So you would agree, as I do, that Bill Clinton and Joe Biden are not exactly saints. And they've had some issues, and Bill Clinton almost lost his presidency.
Bill Clinton a lot more than Joe Biden, by far, yes.
We would agree that Bill Clinton is a ladies' man, which I don't see a problem with. That is a natural inclination. His looks haven't really been too kind to him of late, but he certainly was more attractive in his presidency and in his governorship. And women, and everybody, women and men, are attracted by someone in power. And Bill Clinton also being very intelligent, that's also an attractive quality to most people. So,
which is not the case with Donald. His own professors have said he was a Dumbo. So at least Bill Clinton is brilliant. He's got a very high IQ. That we know.
I mean, we can joke, okay, at least Monica Lewinsky had good taste. But Bill Clinton, being the elder statesman in that position, didn't make a very good decision. And certainly the fact that he denied what happened, then he kind of changed his story and almost lost his presidency, almost lost his license to practice law. That wasn't his finest moment, but Bill Clinton, again, is a human being. Human beings, by nature, are not perfect. And you are saying, okay, you and I agree on that, obviously, but you're saying that that pales in comparison to the indiscretions of one Donald J. Trump. Things in the past,
precisely,
as well as you've things
got
that have
right
occurred
on
of late. Would that be an accurate assessment?
Well, it went back 10 years or more, like he was involved with with women at the time of his of the birth of Barron. I mean, that's despicable. It really is despicable that you would do something like that, because obviously she wasn't in the proper shape, his wife, at that time. God forbid he should do without sex for a while. I mean, the man is really a person who, even now, he talks to the reporter, I forgot his name, for the Washington Post, and he says, "You're nothing as I'm the president." What kind of person talks like that? You might think it. You can think anything you want, but you don't say it out loud to the whole public. It's like, who does that? No president's ever done that. They may have been egotistical, but they didn't talk that way in public. They had it in their heads. You have to know when to not say something. That's part of being an adult.
He certainly is known for being arrogant and being outspoken. And
outspoken is not the word.
Either he kind of grows on you, or you kind of get a bit disgusted.
Like a cancer.
We're speaking with Dr. Ron Feinman from his domicile in Florida on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor, discussing some of the things that Ron and the interviewer to the stars, our very own Scott Spears, talked about last week, and kind of expanding upon that, indicating that Joe Biden, Bill Clinton, they are not saints, to put it mildly, Bill Clinton especially, indiscretions, but we don't question the fact that his presidency seemed to provide a flourishing United States economy. And there are other things about Bill Clinton we like, and Ron and I are both fine.
Things I don't like about Bill Clinton, but you can't compare him to Donald Trump. You know, even in his love life, of course we don't know, but I am sure the list of women that Trump has been involved with is a lot longer than the list of Bill Clinton. I'm sure of it. Although I can't be 100%, I just imagine that anyway. So,
but you are saying
they were women, but not like Trump, who started off very early, you know, way way back in time.
You are saying that Bill Clinton, he is a ladies' man, and we knew that before he even ran for president. It was well known that he was not faithful.
And I don't know how he got through, because Gary Hart couldn't get through, you know, in 1987, 88. And honestly, I mean, we don't know for sure. I think if Gary Hart had been allowed to stay in the race, he might have won over George H.W. Bush. I don't know. I think he was better qualified than Michael Dukakis, who I actually met once at Florida Atlantic, and I got to know him. But I think he would have been the best candidate, but he was destroyed by it, you know, because of that revelation of the one woman, and maybe at others. But then 4 years later, it didn't matter with Clinton. I was shocked. And then with Trump, it didn't matter. And it indicates how general moral standard has gone down, I guess, that these people could be elected and Gary Hart could not.
Well, I think Clinton has a lot more appeal. Gary Hart, I didn't really trust the guy.
He was a very good-looking man at the time.
Yeah, Bill Clinton, though, I just see him as being more trustworthy, more charismatic. And his wife also, she has helped. Even if you don't like Hillary, you do admire that she broke some boundaries. Michelle Obama, like Hillary, being an attorney, never had a first lady who had been to graduate school before. So just things about Bill Clinton. I think also his Southern gentleman nature, like with Jimmy Carter. We enjoy Jimmy Carter as a man, as we do now. His presidency was very rough. We like the Southern gentlemanliness, but I think Carter was a bit too nice. He was a victim of circumstance. We agree the economy would not have done well regardless of who was president, but I do think Carter wasn't exactly helpful to the economy. Let's just leave it at that. Whereas Clinton, I think,
I must tell you, in a few days, it'll be 95 and 7 months. On the 1st of May, he's 7 months past his birthday. I hope he stays healthy. I don't want to see him a victim of this COVID virus. You know, I really don't.
I think with Clinton, we knew that he could put his foot down if necessary and didn't always have to be a Southern gentleman. And that was part of his appeal. And kind of the opposite of Carter, he was a benefactor of circumstance, a very good economy during his presidency, and he resoundingly won a second term. But that's kind of how it is with the president. The buck stops here, as I think Harry Truman said, and that applies to the current administration as well as previous ones and, of course, future ones.
Yes, and I'd like to make a prediction now, which I will maybe modify. I think Trump has definitely, by this point, lost the election and will lose in a landslide, and I'm making up an article about what states he will win for sure, and, of course, subject to change in the next 6 months. But I think the way this is similar to Herbert Hoover in 32. Whatever you want to say, this is his fault or it's not his fault. The economy goes down, and it's this bad, and it's not going to recover quickly. I do think the incumbent has always lost, going back to Marvin Van Buren. And I think it's not going to be a close race, and I hope it isn't, because if it's close, he's going to contest it. But if it's a real walloping defeat in the Electoral College, then he can't, I mean, he can try, but he can't really contest it. But at this point, I don't think more than 15 states, I could actually say for sure, are in his camp, mostly in the South and the Great Plains and some of the Mountain West. There are others who might be. And again, I'm formulating and I'll update it as time goes by, but I think he has no chance to win 30 states again. I don't think so.
We do encourage folks to read Ron's blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, where he talks about these topics and others. If you disagree with him, feel free to throw a spitball at your phone or computer. If you agree with him, feel free to send him an email or virtually shake his hand. Or you can also send me an email, adam at WGH1071.com on our famous private email server, and I will be sure to send the message to the professor that he does have, Ed Meyer-Erz. Now, one big news story, Ron, which I'm sure will have changed by the time that we air this program a couple times because, you know, things change so rapidly in this world. Kim Jong-un. Is he alive? Is he not alive? What is going on with him? What do you think is going on?
Well, I don't know, but I have the thing is, he's overweight, but I never thought he was that overweight that there would be such an issue. But apparently this surgeon, from what we were reading, was nervous doing surgery on him, and maybe that caused his death or caused his to be in a coma. I don't know. I mean, I know he's overweight, but I didn't think he was that overweight from appearance that he would be a problem to such an extent. But I think he's got health issues. It looks like his sister, who seems to be very, you know, I hate to say, very nice looking to look at, although that's not important, seems to be a tough lady, though. She might become the heir apparent, but can she keep power in a country that is so male chauvinist, where a woman really doesn't have power? I don't know, but it looks like he might be gone, and I'm just amazed by the whole thing. He's only 36, and his sister's like 31, so this is the age of the 30-year-olds in power, it seems.
So you don't really know if he's alive or not.
Well, I don't have inside info, to say the least, but he has missed the anniversary of his grandfather's birthday and April 15th, and he hasn't been seen since. And the hints are he is dead, and they're going to announce it soon. So he's no loss, actually, but you have to wonder, is a woman, if she stays in power, going to be easier or tougher for Donald Trump to deal with? And because he does have a second, he does have a very bad thought about women in power. He doesn't seem to like the German chancellor or the past British prime minister who was a woman. I wonder how he would treat her or if he met with her at a summit meeting. But I don't think at this point, when the term that's left, he's going to have any summit meetings. I don't think so. And I don't think he's going to be there after next January 20th. So it's probably academic to even discuss a meeting.
Do you think his sister would be a more traditional ruler, not the dictator type that Kim is?
Well, the thing is, the whole family's been authoritarian since 1945. She'd be the fourth in a row. I have a feeling she could be, I hate to compare, but maybe she would be the Catherine the Great of her country, which means a nasty, horrible person who had lots of people killed and, you know, and was a real corrupt person, you know, although Russia's very different. But there aren't too many women leaders in history, but I don't know if she can last. She might be overthrown by some relative or someone else. But I don't think she's going to be a charming lady, although she looks nice. I mean, I admit she does, but she's also very young. But I have a feeling she will probably be a tyrant because that's part of the tradition that keeps the family in power since 1945.
Yeah, looking at the Daily Beast, a liberal-leaning website, one of the contributors is a regular guest on this station, Eleanor Clift. Of course, she speaks to Scott regularly. And the Daily Beast, I would think, is in line with the political beliefs of our guest, Dr. Ronald L. Fineman. So they put an article out over the weekend. Like her brother, Kim Jo-Jong is much better looking. I added that myself. I agree. She is very easy on the eyes. And her brother.
Well, she's young also.
Yeah.
That helps.
I kind of like his outfits. His shirts are kind of cool. And that haircut is different. Kind of like a modified bowl haircut, but Kim Jo-Jong is more of a traditional.
Better looks than her brother ever had. He was never much to look at.
Yeah, I kind of like the way he dresses, though. Those shirts are kind of cool, and his haircut a little different. But whatever floats your boat. Her brother.
My haircuts. I haven't had a haircut in 7 weeks now.
His sister Kim Jo-Jong, a traditional young female haircut. She has beautiful, long, straight, dark hair, cute little smile, nice eyes. You know, again, easy on the eyes. Only 31 years old.
Not fat. She's slim also.
Definitely looks like she goes to the gym and eats more often and eats less cheeseburgers than her brother. Anyway, says that like her brother.
Can Rob and go to visit her, I wonder?
Kim Jo-Jong has cultivated a special relationship with President Donald Trump, but has given up nothing on the nuclear and missile issues. It says Kim Jo-Jong's rise within North Korea is omnipotent, or is it omnipotent? I guess whichever floats your boat. I like omnipotent better myself. Organization and guidance department.
We actually agree once on language.
makes her North Korea's number two in the eyes of the Workers' Party bureaucrats. That makes her not only the most visible heir to Kim Jong-un's throne, but already a central figure of authority. She makes decisions on what's important enough for Big Brother Kim Jong-un's scrutiny, says Robert Collins, who spent over 40 years analyzing North Korea. So if there is a change at the throne in North Korea, I'm sure that will become a big news headline.
Absolutely, and she could be a tyrant like Catherine the Great of Russia, or she could be someone more like Elizabeth I, who was also, you know, basically a tyrant, but not on the same uncivilized scale as Catherine the Great. You know, but maybe Queen Elizabeth I. She's certainly not going to be Queen Elizabeth II, the present one, who just hit 94 this past week. And she sounds great in what she says, and she's much more rational and reasonable than Donald Trump. I really commend her at age 94. So here she's 94, and Jimmy Carter's 95 and 7 months in a few days. God bless them.
In your blog over the weekend, Ron, you write, Americans in sacrifice rather than just self-concern. It's infuriating that so many Americans have such selfish, self-centered needs that nothing else matters to them, even in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic. God forbid you can't go to the gym, get a haircut, get a tattoo, get your nails painted. Well, men get their nails painted also, but women, men, again, that's in the whatever floats your boat category. We already discussed the tattoo that I got about 20 years ago, so I already have a tattoo, but maybe I'll want another one at some time, you know. Why not? Going bowling, other sports, etc. Now, my issue with this, Ron, the main one, is we're not just talking about the customers of bowling alleys, hair salons, gyms. For one thing, going to the gym is a way to become healthier, especially if you're like most Americans, overweight and eat too many hamburgers. There's no secret. I would say most Americans don't really live as healthy of a lifestyle as they should. I certainly try to, but I don't claim to be perfect by any means. Not just the customers. And again, by going to the gym, bowling, you stay healthier. And if you do acquire a disease, that will reduce the chances that it will be a serious disease, or you may not even get it to begin with if you stay healthy and increase your natural immunity. I don't think I need to be a doctor to proclaim that, and I'm only saying it in a general sense. Also, the employees. Right now, there are...
No question, the employees are not working. That's the problem.
There are hairstylists.
But again, we're not talking about banning this for months. We're saying it's only been a few weeks, a few more weeks until we get to the point where hopefully the amount of increase stops and it starts going down of cases. That's the point. It's not saying wipe it out for the next year. It's saying short-term suffering for long-term gain. That's the point I'm making.
Right now, there are hairstylists, employees of bowling alleys, casinos, and other venues that are closed who are out of work right now. Maybe they're watching Netflix, spending time with their families, but they'd rather work and rather make money.
And yes, one thing I got to say about the casinos, the workers, I understand, but actually the people who cannot go and bet now are saving money for the future when they might need it by not gambling away money. How's that?
Well, they might be doing other things because, for example, you can gamble online. You can waste money in many ways online. You can also...
People drink liquor at home more often.
Correct.
So they add into their alcohol problem. Yes.
Exactly. If you drink more, that's obviously not good in many ways unless you're someone who can control drinking. And people drink for different reasons in different patterns. There is controversy, Ron, including between yourself and myself, as to the prevalence of the virus. Not that it doesn't exist or does exist. How serious the illness is based upon a certain demographic of people, and again, the mortality rate. And every time I open up a news source, I see different statistics. And I've seen statistics that show that not even 10% of people that show a positive test result become symptomatic. And then what's the mortality rate? Well, if it's 4% among people who are symptomatic, yes, that's 1 in 25 people. That's not very good. But if less than 10% of people who test positive are symptomatic, and therefore 4% mortality rate of those people, suddenly it's 1 in every 250 people. That's not good either. I'm not saying that it is. But we have to balance what this is doing to the economy, people's livelihoods, many times people's sanity, because you do get cabin fever, versus the risks if we do let things go back to normal. As we've talked about last week, and we agree, just waking up in the morning, you're taking a risk. I get in my car and drive 70 miles an hour on the freeway, I'm taking a risk.
And we don't. By the way, in California, there are a few people who have been caught speeding 135 to 160 miles an hour because there's open roads. My God, what a dangerous thing to do.
Well, I don't advocate that, but a balance has to be drawn. But I would like to challenge you, Ron, by saying, you're saying, God forbid, they cannot get their haircuts. I know you're being sarcastic, and you know, I speak the same way. I got that from my mother, because that's exactly the kind of thing she might say. But it's not a case of of customers like yourself and myself not being able to get a haircut, or if you're so inclined, get your nails done or go bowling, what have you. It's the people that work at these places who also pay taxes and help the economy. It's a domino or mushroom type of effect. And is it worth doing it? Well, I certainly think precautions need to be taken, but I do feel it's been over-dramatized. And I think it's going to...
Well, the only thing I'll say is that about 53,000 dead now in about 6 weeks. We've had about 900,000 people said to have it, you know, according to the figures on both CNN and MSNBC. So that's about a 6% rate of deaths for the compared to the number of people who have the cases. And that's very high compared to the flu, which is usually no more than 1% or 2%. So it's about triple right now.
What are the percentage of people who have been exposed or who have antibodies who are symptomatic? I've seen where it's less than 10%, but I've seen where it's higher. I don't know. I don't claim to have medical knowledge, but I would tend to agree that, and I think you would also, Ron, the percentage of people that would show some exposure, and I don't know if it's either you're exposed or you're not, or you're partially exposed, is much, much higher. Quite possibly a third to half the population. And how many people develop the antibodies, and this idea of herd immunity. How true is it? Can you catch the virus more than once? I've heard where you catch it the second time, it's more severe. So really, we don't know a lot of things, but is it worth tanking the U.S. economy and people's livelihoods and lifestyles to almost get to the bottom of this in an experimental basis? And I'm kind of seeing that. And that's why people are getting antsy.
Well, I am concerned that there are those projections by Dr. Fauci and others that it will decline in the summer somewhat and then come back with a rage in the fall, like in 1918, 1919. The first wave was small comparatively, and the second wave was gigantic. And that's really scary and terrifying if that's going to go on into the next year, too. That is terrifying. And I hope they're wrong, but they're projecting it's going to be a worse thing than it is now, even though we might have a decline for a while. So I don't know how we're going to deal with it. It's going to be a nightmare, no matter what we do.
Like with many issues, Ron, we're not comparing apples to apples by comparing 1918 to 2020. I mean, for obvious reasons. The world's much more...
Well, the numbers are greater, the number of people, obviously.
Right. Well, science and medicine are much more advanced. Pharmaceutical industry is much more advanced. Yes, many more people, much more industry, much more pollution, and, of course, all the political ramifications. I'm not saying this is a perfect analogy, but we talk about comparing people escaping from Nazi Germany versus people escaping from cultures in the world where life isn't quite as good as it is here, to put it mildly, and thinking that they can get amnesty. That's not comparing apples to apples. Yes, there are some similarities, but in my opinion, very few. And it does offend me when people think that, okay, well, it's okay to expect amnesty. It's okay to think you can just live in the United States. We have a history of being accommodating to people. Yes, we do, but it's not quite that simple. Now, certainly there are parallels. And I would agree this is a pandemic, but we have a smarter society. We have better doctors, smarter doctors, more doctors, and a more diverse pool of doctors and other medical professionals, better medications, technology to deliver it, technology to communicate, technology to test. There really are few apples-to-apples comparisons as I see it. And yes, we do need to look at some of the lessons learned from previous moments in history. But I think that this comparing to 102 years ago is gone a little too far. Now, maybe I'm wrong.
I want to just mention, though, that if we continue, as we have now, to have 2,500 a day added to the deaths, if it continues as it is, that would mean in another 20 days, by around May 15th, we will have 100,000 people dead. Can you imagine that? And then it's not even the worst time when it might be worse, you know, after it goes down a little bit. I mean, my God, we could have a million people killed by this.
The other issue, Ron, too, is, and this is a black and white issue, is other medical procedures, other medical tests are not being performed because coronavirus is at the forefront.
True.
People getting colonoscopies, things that, including people of our age group, are at risk for. These tests are not being provided. They're not being prioritized.
Yes. And that's true.
It's like, okay, well, all we care about is this coronavirus issue. And yes, it is very serious, but this isn't the only issue that's out there. This issue did not exist 6 months ago. And the same illnesses that we had last year, they're still around. And we want to encourage people to get tested for them to maintain their good health. And
absolutely. I want to also mention it's disturbing that people of color, African Americans and Hispanics, are dying in much larger percentages than whites, and also senior citizens are dying in much larger. Although there was a 5-month-old baby I saw that died, and you know, in the young people in their 20s. So, but it's really amazing how certain groups are really becoming much more the victims in percentages than other groups.
I mean, there are exceptions, but you would agree. Again, I'm not quoting a medical opinion. I'm not a doctor, just I think a halfway intelligent person, as Ron obviously is, that people with underlying medical conditions, including advanced age, which is essentially a medical condition, are at a higher risk, and the mortality rate is much higher. Now, there are 30-year-old people who go to the gym every day, who are fit as a fiddle, who are acquiring serious symptoms and sometimes are passing away. I'm not denying that. But if you look at the distribution, those people are certainly in the minority. However, there are people every day who are youthful and healthy who unfortunately pass away.
All kinds of diseases and die. Yeah.
Right. It could be from a disease they didn't know that they had, or it could be from some unknown, or unfortunately from an accident.
Yeah, I just read that a couple of people in their 30s and 40s were getting strokes. I've had these, which is amazing, and they never had any hints of it before.
Right.
That they're suddenly getting strokes and they have the virus.
So there are people that say it's a hoax, it is greatly exaggerated, it's fake. I'm not saying that, but I do think that the overdramatization and all the arguing is getting out of hand, and the idea of balancing a tanking of the economy and people's lifestyles with what is considered to be a prudent method of containing this problem. I'm wondering if that balance is in the right place, because I don't personally think that it is.
So therefore, you're saying that your governor in Ohio and Governor Cuomo in New York and Governor Hogan, also like your governor, a Republican, and Governor Newsom, that they're overdoing it?
Yes, I do. In addition to the fact that I don't like a governor telling a private business, you have to close in 6 hours. I don't like the way it was handled. I mean, I don't like to whine to begin with. Now, granted, if it were Cordray saying it, I would likely be less critical. But that's the nature of politics. If it's someone that I like, I'm going to be less critical, or maybe even say, let me go ahead and adjust my opinion. Yes, I believe it's over-dramatized and a lot of hypocrisy. In terms of gyms, yes, precautions need to be taken. I had no problem with saying the saunas should be closed, other areas where people are close. But a 6-foot distance to me in a gym is very feasible, a lot more feasible than it is in Walmart. I'll tell you that right now. And I'm not gonna deny this, Ron. I'm a bit afraid to go into Walmart because people aren't following these procedures. But I follow these procedures anyway.
Well, I know with Walgreens, you know, I go in, they have to sign you must wear a mask to come in. Must.
I
mean,
I was thinking about how I could. I'm a bit of a germaphobe. And we have Donald Trump, who said he's a germaphobe, which might be a little ironic if he is on the more lenient side of this. But I always keep away from people in a store. I don't trust what diseases they have. Now, I've been more conscientious about that. I agree with that. But I do that anyway. I always use hand sanitizer. And I am obsessed with hand washing. Anybody who knows me is aware of that. And I kind of got that from my father, which I think is a very, very good characteristic. Now, I've been more conscientious about it of late. I'm not saying I've not honed these skills and these practices. But I've been like that anyway. So no one ever washed their hands or used hand sanitizer or practiced a general idea of social distancing with people you don't know, like if you go to Walmart or the mall. No one ever did that before, and that's kind of worrisome. I mean, it's kind of hard to comment on that, Ron, but I'd like to think that these are good practices anyway. And if there is a disease that's going around, because there are seasonal diseases all the time, this is one of many in my lifetime, although it's certainly probably the most serious and the most the one we need to keep an eye on the most. But
yes,
these are good practices to follow anyway. And it shouldn't you shouldn't have to have this huge event occur in order to take a step back and say, well, there are just certain things you need to do as a grown-up to stay healthy. Again, not continually being crowds of people that you don't know the actual health of. You need to wash your hands. You need to sanitize surfaces. You go to the gym. After you finish with a weight machine, wipe it off. They have signs saying to do that anyway. And just use basic common sense. Now, granted, a healthy person will have basic immunity, but there are some common sense procedures to follow. But yes, you asked, do I believe that Governors DeWine and Cuomo and others have overdramatized and infringed upon our rights? You better believe I do.
What about Florida and Georgia, though? You know, Florida's in the process of opening up where we're having increased cases, and a lot of them are senior citizens in South Florida, and also Georgia, of course.
I say this, Ron, if you are at a higher risk group, and this is what they did initially before they had all these closures, stay home. Yes, but that applies to anybody with any illness. This especially because of the contagious nature. So I think that's just something that people need to do anyway. In terms of Georgia, I applaud what the governor is doing. And if the haters want to throw an egg at their phone or computer right now, that's fine. It's America. You're allowed to do that. Maybe I'll end up being wrong.
I'd be a scene to see throwing an egg at their phone.
But I do believe that a person should make wise decisions. If I have a cold, I'm not going to go out, not to somewhere where people could catch it, not only because I don't want other people to catch it, but because it could get worse or be compounded by another illness. Those, are common sense things you do as an adult. And that was the procedure we followed initially until suddenly the idea was to go ahead and close things down. And Governor DeWine pretty much led the way with that. And again,
the case of New York, though, remember, New York's had a massive number of cases, much more than Ohio or anybody. So don't you think Cuomo's in a different situation than any of the other governors?
Well, I don't like Cuomo either. So, again, my opinion will be biased.
We have so many people dying compared to any other state by far. So there is a little different there than Ohio or California or Maryland.
I think we need to take a step back before saying to hair salons, gyms, bowling alleys, tattoo shops, malls, you need to close down within 3 hours. We'll let you know when you can open back up again. That isn't cool to me. I don't see that as being something that should have been done. I don't like the way it was handled, but we'll find out. Maybe I'm completely wrong about this. I don't know. And I don't know what the exact...
Well, I just hope and pray we don't reach 100,000 dead in the next six weeks or a month. That's what we're, or even less than 6 weeks. Because at this rate, there'll be 100,000 before the end of May. And I hope it isn't. Then that might not even be the big wave. That's what's horrifying, you know, what could be. But we don't know,
of course. You can see what I'm saying, Ron. Even you agree.
Yes.
Again, you put the boundary at a different place. But we are, you know, we're 80% agreement. You have to balance it out. There's the herd immunity. There's the infringing upon people's rights. There is the case where people that are at high risk shouldn't be going out and about anyway. And that applies at any time.
Yes. And, so you're right.
Many things that come about here, and yes, we will find out, and let's hope that things can get back to normal, and we'll learn something from this. And definitely, folks, I know I may be a bit obsessed about it, but yes, wash your hands, use hand sanitizer, keep to a minimum the number of times that you're in a large group of people where you may not know what their health may be. And
yeah, like restaurants, they're not going to be able to have restaurants, people close together, or movies, or concerts with large crowds, or stadiums with baseball or football.
I don't know
how they're going to deal with that in the future.
I don't know. We're really in an unprecedented time. And yes, there are some parallels with 1918, but I don't really see too many.
I want to mention one more thing. Wilson said very little about it and did very little about it because of the First World War. So we look back and we realize he didn't show much compassion or empathy, much like Trump has not said much. They're really similar in that regard, a new angle about Wilson not helping his reputation, which has been in decline for years. Now it adds another thing to it.
Yeah. Well, we shall see. And we certainly can agree, Ron, that how this ends up will have a large effect on whether or not Donald Trump becomes president for four more years and what his legacy will be.
Yes.
It's unfortunate. It's due to a negative event, but this is an exciting, interesting time in our nation's history, to put it mildly.
Actually, the books will be written about it.
So we invite you folks, make up your own opinions. You know, if you agree with me, don't agree with me. Like Ron, you know, mostly agree, but not completely. And there are reasons
why. We always agreed on everything. It'd be boring, wouldn't it?
Yeah. But I think, you know, in hindsight, Ron, we understand where I'm coming from. I know where you're coming from. And there are things that have to be balanced out. And you're not going to live inside a cave with the door nailed shut. You wake up in the morning.
Aidman did.
Yeah. Well, you wake up in the morning, and it's another day of life. And you have to take risks, but take intelligent risks. That's part of being an intelligent adult, part of being a grown-up. And even people that are grown-ups probably need to consider that as good advice. Thank you again, Dr.
Thanks again for inviting me.
Dr. Ron Feynman, for being with us. Another great show. Of course, the time flew. We only discussed one half of 1% of the topics on the agenda, but that's okay. Please visit Ron's blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com. And last but not least, send me an email. Let me know what you think. If you think I'm right, wrong, crazy, or whatever else. You want to comment on how well I sung the happy birthday message to the lovely Melania. Whatever you want to tell me about, I'd love to hear from you on the private email server, adam@wwgh1071.com.